Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. The big story in town this week, of course, Marty Walsh. After he was sworn in, the new mayor of Boston embraced inclusiveness with a centuries-old phrase about the city.
We are a city upon a hill. But it's not just the shining light of Beacon Hill. It's Savin Hill where I live. It's Bunker Hill and Bellevue Hill. And Ford Hill. It's Pope's Hill and Jones Hill and Telegraph Hill.
Also new leadership for the Boston Police Department, which now has the highest ranking African American in its history. And that man, William Gross, says the city has come a long way since he first arrived here during busing.
We didn't really have much input about how we were being policed. We didn't believe that our voice was heard.
Plus, this week, the French company Keolis won a $4.3 billion contract to run the state's commuter rail system.
We are very focused on customer service, cleanliness, reliability, on-time performance. We're going to bring improvements to the service, and we hope they see those improvements from the beginning.
And the Patriots prepare for the playoffs, bruised and battered as they are.
And joining us now to talk more about these stories and the rest of the week's news is Mike Ross. He's a former city councilor, former candidate for mayor. He's now with the law firm Prince Lobel and an op-ed contributor for the Boston Globe. And hello, Mike Ross. Great to have you with us.
It's great to be here with you.
Also with us, Peter Canellos. He's the editorial page editor of the Boston Globe, a regular here on Radio Boston. Peter, happy Friday to you. Good to have you.
Thank you, Anthony.
So let's begin with the inauguration of the new mayor. Marty Walsh was concise when he laid out his goals for his time in City Hall. Here's what he said on Monday.
My priorities are clear. Strengthening our economy and creating jobs. Improving public safety and stopping senseless gun violence. Ensuring our schools help every child to succeed. And increasing trust and transparency in city governments.
So there it is, jobs, public safety, schools, and trust. Peter, I'll start with you. You've heard a lot of big promises from mayors over the years. This is the first set of priorities laid out by Marty Walsh. What do you make of his agenda this week?
Well, those are very admirable priorities, but they're not a surprise in the sense that almost anyone elected mayor would be focusing on those issues. You know, he's sort of just defining the job of mayor there by stating those priorities. But an inaugural address is sort of not the time to get into specifics. It's more to talk about principles. And so as far as that goes, I thought it was a good address.
What did you think, Mike Ross, the sort of early take on Mayor Walsh as he laid out, as Peter says, these principles?
I mean, the most impressive thing about the speech might have been the number of people who came to listen to it. It was a filled Conti auditorium. 6,000 people were in attendance. That's a big room, and it would have been easy to close off a section of it to try to make it look bigger. You know, we've seen that happen before. Marty filled the room. And his speech was good. His line, "I will listen, I will lead, I will learn, I will lead," which was on the Boston Globe the next day. And his kind of the analogies of those hills, you know, that, yeah.
That was a great line.
It was a great line, yeah. You know, and that stood out to me. But probably the thing that people were most interested in seeing that day was where people were sitting.
The hierarchy.
That was it. Who was in the front row and who was in the back row? I mean, there was a lot of new jockeying for kind of, you know, the political world, and that was probably the biggest intrigue of the day.
Well, let me ask you about one of the big priorities that he laid out, and that is urban violence, in particular neighborhoods in this city. He put it very high up on his agenda. In fact, his first official meeting as mayor was with neighborhood advocates, the clergy, members of law enforcement, victims of violence, to talk about solutions. Powerful symbolism, but Peter, is it going to move towards something substantive, or how, you know, what's your reaction to how significant this was?
Well, I think that, you know, one of Marty Walsh's strengths, just like Tom Medino's strengths, is his ability to reach out to all the communities of Boston and to just be a visible presence. And I think that he's in that stage of sort of establishing himself as a person of trust, trusted a very, you know, at an eye level with Bostonians. So there's strong usefulness in that. And I think he's put together a good team at the police department, too. And I think, you know, both of those things are going to hold him in good stead in fighting violence. But as yet, we haven't seen the sort of programmatic, policy-oriented thrusts that are going to define his first term. And you know, we'll have to judge those when they appear.
Mm. Mike Ross, what did you make of making this the very first official meeting as mayor to talk about urban violence?
I think he made good on a campaign promise. Somewhere along the trail, he said that will be his first duty. And in fact, that is what happened. But also, that wasn't just your standard meeting. He added to it the recovery community, which tells me that he wants to go beyond the traditional means in which to deal with violence. He wants to go to the causes, the root causes of violence. And that, you know, is a difference between your basic law and order type of approaches. It gets more complicated when you try to figure out why people are reoffending, why people are, why recidivism rates are higher. And, him bringing the recovery community into that conversation, I think, spoke to both his own personal experiences as well as kind of his desire to try to get to the root causes of violence.
I was going to say, as a recovering alcoholic himself, I mean, it's interesting. It almost like he's really sort of putting his own sort of personal experience into this effort. I thought that was, I was struck by that.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of these kind of, he uses his own personal experiences. You know, he's very much like Menino in that way. You know, I mean, he has some similarities in that he's kind of self-identifying with the problems he faces.
Another point the new mayor hit strongly was the future of the Boston Redevelopment Authority. Let's listen here.
I am committed to restructuring the Boston Redevelopment Authority and to bring together a smart, rational, effective way so all the parts of city government and job creation work for the consumer and for the business community. We can make Boston a leader in streamlined, transparent, and effective job and business growth. We have to make clear to everyone that Boston is open for business.
So, Peter, now that the mayor is in office in charge of the BRA, do you think he'll make substantive reforms that he talked about during the election when it comes to the BRA?
Yes. I mean, I think he will make substantive reforms. I don't think that he'll, you know, demolish it and restructure it and rebuild it in quite the grand, blunt ways that it was described on the campaign trail. But I think this broad consensus that the city needs to do more planning. There's also a consensus that the way that the BRA has managed its sort of development and planning functions haven't been properly coordinated. There are other programs in the BRA, such as the affordable housing program, that have been managed ineffectively. So there's a lot of room for restructuring and improvement in the BRA, and I think he'll do that. I don't think it's going to be come out looking like an entirely different agency, but I think that it'll be better.
Mm. Mike, you ran for mayor with the idea of reforming aspects of the BRA. What did you hear this week, and what do you hope will happen?
Well, I agree with Peter. I don't, you know, what was happening on the campaign trail with what Marty Walsh was saying was that he wanted to break apart the BRA. What I was saying is that we should plan first and build later, not break apart the BRA. With this announcement around transparency, I think he took a third way, which was, you know, I'm not going to speak for him, but my sense is this might substitute for that kind of, as Peter was saying, that in lieu of that grand kind of breaking apart of the BRA, which, you know, I think would be a problem. I think it would, because we're in the middle of a building boom. Cranes are in the air. We're going through a massive transition right now with a city bureaucracy. And disassembling the very development agency, while it is churning out these projects, could be a big mistake. Mm. However, making it more transparent and accountable, that would be the right thing to do.
Peter and Mike, in addition to the big Boston police appointments this week by Marty Walsh, he also announced numerous cabinet and city hall positions. Joyce Linehan, who many of us in the media knew for years as the woman who did a lot of publicity work for arts organizations, but she's a fellow Dorchester resident, big sort of believer in Marty Walsh, was very involved in his campaign. Now she's his chief of policy. Felix Arroyo, former rival candidate, chief of health and human services. Eugene O'Flaherty, a Democrat from Chelsea who's been a big player on the House Judiciary Committee. He's going to be the city's top lawyer. Mike Ross, I'm interested in your views on the strengths and weaknesses of the team that the mayor has assembled so far.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's interesting. I mean, I think you're not talking about the police just yet, and I think that was probably the most interesting thing, you know, appointment. Joyce is great. I mean, people really, really like Joyce, and she's been on the ground doing the work for so many years. People really respect her. She'll do great. And Felix, you know, I think the same way. I think the Globe was right to raise the question about, you know, how is the public health commission going to be handled. But Felix,
because he doesn't have a formal health background.
He's not a public health official. I mean, well, he would be if he was placed in that position, but he's not a publicly trained public health official. but he is someone who worked extensively with youth and at-risk youth, and you know, coaching. His story is that he was a coach for a baseball coach or a little league coach. He'll do a great job in that capacity. And then, you know, Gino Flaherty, there was obviously a pointed column in the Globe this morning as well. I think it was this morning as well. Remains to be seen.
Mike, you prefaced your comments about Linehan and Arroyo and O'Flaherty by saying that you think the police were the key news this week. Is that because of the symbolism of an African-American being the number two?
I think there's a lot you can talk about for the police appointments. I mean, for one thing, it's the crime is down in the city of Boston. I mean, Tom Menino achieved and the commissioners who worked under him had great results with regard to our crime in our city. I think that Marty Walsh might be concerned about some grand change in that department and altering the success that we've seen. For him to kind of to keep the continuity with Bill Evans in that position, that's a good move. He's also well-liked. Commissioner Evans is very well-liked. He has a soft way about him, soft touch to the way about him, I guess what you'd say. People talked about Occupy Boston. He was good. I mean, when in other cities, when you were seeing riots,
right,
here in Boston,
we didn't break heads here.
No, and, you know, part of the strategy, I think, was to kind of engage in that type of, to get the headlines. That Bill Evans didn't let that happen. And
he talked about, he used this line, killing them with kindness. I mean, he was out there handing out
a police
cell phone
officer
number
saying that,
and
exactly.
That kind of stuff. Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, he really is that good. He believes in that, and he is such a decent person. He's also a good cop, and he knows what he's doing, and he's also a hell of a runner. I mean, the guy
that's
is
right. You as a runner yourself, your ads of your running, right? Has he run 14 marathons or something like that, Evans?
Well,
let's not
and
forget.
And Ross as well, I think, yeah.
I mean, let's not forget that when that terrible day when those bombs went off, he had just finished the marathon,
yeah,
right? And he turned around and ran right in and took charge.
Peter, when you look at Menino's team, the people that he helped, that he chose to help him run the city, how do you contrast them with Marty Walsh's people so far?
I think they're from a similar set of backgrounds. I mean, you know, Menino even had an Evans as a commissioner. So William Evans' brother was one of Menino's commissioners. So it's a very, very similar approach to what Menino had. One thing that I would note is that the mayor said that he's going to be going outside, or at least doing a national search for a school superintendent. And generally, I think that's been well received. The idea of looking for the best person outside of Boston, I think, sometimes makes sense. But in all cities, it seems like these superintendents come and go in, you know, 4 and 5 year stints, not knowing anything about the city that they're heading towards, that it's just become the nature of the profession, unfortunately. I would hope that he would consider the possibility of an actual Bostonian as school superintendent, somebody who really knows the history, knows the neighborhoods, knows the issues, doesn't need to get up to speed. Because, you know, another 4-year tenure from somebody who's never been here, it's almost impossible to imagine them being successful.
And Marty Walsh has said that he believes that will be his most important appointment, but we just haven't seen it yet. And Mike and Peter, quick take from you. Should the average Bostonian care all that much about who the mayor puts in these posts, or are they largely behind-the-scenes players?
Oh, absolutely they should care about these posts. These are critical to running the city.
What about the Linehan, Arroyo type of a Flaherty-level posts, rather than, say, police commissioner or superintendent?
I mean, you know, they're handling significant budgets, and in some cases, they are the difference in interrupting the lives of an at-risk youth and child. And then, you know, obviously Corporation Council is a pretty important position as well.
And Peter?
Yeah, what I would say is that people should care about how those agencies are run and how effectively they're run. You know, whether the person who's appointed, you know, makes political sense on day one and wins broad applause is less important in those jobs. I mean, it's not like Eugene O'Flaherty is going to have to go to the people daily and win their confidence. I mean, you know, you want the Corporation Council to be a good lawyer first and foremost, and that's why that's a problematic appointment. So, anyway.
Let me come back. I want to just ask a little bit more about the leadership of the Boston Police Department. We talked about William Evans as the city's new commissioner. Also this week, Police Superintendent William Gross. We haven't talked as much about him. He was named as the number two position in the department, becoming the highest ranking African American now in the department's history. Just one guy, but of course, former Commissioner Ed Davis faced criticism, in particular from minority officers, as doing too little to promote diversity in the department. Mike, what's your take? This is just one guy, Gross, but how significant is this promotion of William Gross?
Well, it's significant for a couple of reasons. First, there hasn't been a superintendent in chief. This is the person who actually runs the department, right? So who is the highest ranking officer? The commissioner is a civilian. No longer, does the commissioner wear a badge. The highest ranking police officer is William Gross. And it's the first time it's an African-American. Mm-hmm. So it's significant from that reason. It's also significant because Marty Walsh has committed to having women and people of color 50% of his administration. And in appointing Bill Evans, who's white, he also appointed William Gross, who's black, and he's living up to that commitment. Mm.
Peter, your thoughts?
I think it's important, and I think it's important for the reasons you outlined, that Ed Davis had been criticized for lack of diversity in the upper ranks. I do think that we're moving a little beyond the sort of first and only period of celebration for people of color advancing, and it's less significant as a kind of milestone than it is just for the idea that the department should reflect the city, and that if people are going to have confidence in the police department, they really want to see officers and commanders who understand every corner of Boston and can speak to all the people of Boston. So diversity should be sort of an ongoing effort and should include, all different races and neighborhoods and mm-hmm. genders and sexual orientations.
And a different issue, actually. I want to bring up something about the MBTA, which is that this French rail company, Keolis, won a big contract this week to operate the 14 commuter rail lines. This was after unanimous backing from the State Department of Transportation. But then the Mass Bay Commuter Railroad Company, which runs it now, threatened to challenge the decision. So, Peter, give us a little backstory here on this wrangling.
Well, the wrangling has emerged, I think, because the current operator, who has includes many former officials on its payroll and has been entrenched for 10 years, was widely believed to have the inside track on getting this contract, so much so that only one other firm even bid. So it was a big surprise that the outside firm won this contract. We didn't hear any complaints about the process until the last couple of weeks, when you sensed that MCBR, the current holder, began to sense that they might not be getting it. So I don't put a lot of stock in the complaints about the process. And in fact, the fact that they chose the outside firm suggests that what people had believed about the process, that it was all kind of rigged for the inside group, was wrong, and that the MBTA is really looking to make improvement in commuter rail service. And so that's an admirable thing.
Do you, Mike, you particularly during your campaign were, a big advocate of issues like housing and transportation, and the commuter rail, has had a lot of complaints in recent years. I mean, what's your take on this? Do you feel like this change in part reflects the problems we've seen in the past?
Well, I mean, it remains to be seen how the new company is going to run the commuter rail. But the commuter rail, we've found, can be a tool not just to move commuters way outside the city of Boston, but even move commuters within the city of Boston. So creative solutions using commuter rail are important. I just kind of am amazed that this even happened. I mean, 10 years ago, the inside Boston company that's run by, the previous general manager of the MBTA would have gotten it. In fact, 10 years ago, they did. but, now, this outside company with, not really any ties to this community, who is saying that they're going to save millions of dollars for the taxpayers and improve service, which remains to be seen, but came in and got the contract. And I also give credit to Rich Davey, who recused himself and, and successfully did so, and this went through.
Sounds like you feel like this was model government in some ways.
Well, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how well this works.
I would add that there's good reason to believe that Keolis, the outside company, will do a better job, because they have a good track record in Northern Virginia, where they took over a railroad and really increased ridership, which is what we need to do here in Massachusetts. And they're also looking to the MBTA as sort of a beachhead to do more such projects in the United States. This is a French firm. Cool. And so they're really going to try to deliver here so that they can prove themselves to other American cities.
I hear they're going to offer champagne and pate, which I think is fantastic. Okay, sorry, that you can't. That's off the record, not official. Let's move on. This week, South Boston City Councilor Bill Linehan was elected to be the president of the city council. He received 8 of 13 votes, beat out Ayanna Pressley for the second most powerful office in the city. Mike, I'd love to get your perspective as a former city councilor. Some have said this is a victory for the more conservative strain of Boston politics. What do you see there?
Well, first of all, this is an exercise that virtually no one really cares about except for the members of the city council and then us, who are talking about it around the table.
Okay, good. But thank you for putting it in perspective.
but the reason why we actually may want to care this time is because this actually had kind of spilled out because of what happened with Michelle Wu. And what happened is Ayanna Pressley put herself forward to be the first woman African-American city council president. And Michelle Wu was recently elected. She's also a person of color, a woman who's on the city council, you know, one of two. So, you know, she wound up going, Michelle Wu, with Bill Linehan. And that was really the story around that.
That was a shock for many people.
It was. And the progressive community, but not only the progressive community, but also the communities of color, were very upset with Michelle, who felt that she campaigned as someone who wanted to put herself out as a progressive, you know, left-leaning person. And in fact, you know, she winds up endorsing or voting for perhaps the most conservative member for the Boston City Council.
Mm. Peter, do you want to comment? We're going to move on to our hubbub, but we have a few seconds. Do you want to comment on what Mike was just talking about there? About the?
I basically agree with him about Michelle Wu. She's not offered a good explanation for this, and I'm very disappointed that she didn't change her vote when Ayanna put herself forward. And the only thing I can think of is that she's 28 years old, and she seemed so mature and so had so much poise during the campaign, and she's really off to a rocky start and seems kind of young and unsure of herself right now.
So let's move on to our hubbubs, those stories that perhaps didn't make the front page but caught our attention nevertheless. Peter, let me come to you. Your hubbub for this
well,
week.
This is one that I'm sure will interest Mike, who's a supporter of the idea of microbrews in Boston and becoming a big industry in Boston. But Trappist monks out in Spencer, to raise extra money to keep their monastery going, have opened a brewery and are starting to market their own brew. This is a good show of enterprise by the monks, but also I think shows that brewing beer, which is becoming craft brews are becoming more and more popular, and the laws are sort of slowly changing in a way that will make distribution of craft brews better, got beer more better, easily creating more opportunities. This can be a great industry for Massachusetts.
Might make some good beer, too. I understand they're using a Belgian Trappist beer recipe, so that'll be good.
Yeah.
Mike, what about your hubbub?
Well, first of all, I have to comment. I think that I love that story. I mean, it's like the one thing I might have wanted to be a Trappist monk, because I think it's so cool that these guys make beer. But technically, Peter, that was on the front page of the Boston Globe, so that can't be a hubbub. So I don't mean to get technical.
That's right. The hubbub fell through the cracks.
Sorry, Peter.
Right?
You still owe us a hubbub.
All right, we'll hold you to that later. As he's thinking, I have a hubbub that has nothing to do with Boston, unfortunately. So I'm also. I owe you one. But it was cold in Boston this week, very cold. And yet, imagine, we're used to it. We're New Englanders. There was a guy in Kentucky who was in jail. He escaped from jail, and it was so cold in Kentucky that he called the police and he asked the police to bring him back to jail.
Oh, that's great. All right.
He had frostbite on his hands.
All right. Saj, if you don't mind, I'm going to segue to my hubbub because it follows Mike's really well. Speaking of cold weather, only 5 weeks until pitchers and catchers report for spring training. Okay, I think this is important. So always a good excuse to talk about baseball. So my hubbub, tip of the cap to the great pitcher from Billerica, Mass., Tom Glavine. He pitched this week. He pitched. He was elected this week to the Baseball Hall of Fame, along with Tom Maddox and slugger Frank Thomas. But I want to focus on him because he was born in Concord, went to Billerica High, son of a construction worker and a stay-at-home mom, a kid from Massachusetts. Not a lot of them make it to pro ball because of our cold weather, short season, short playing season. But he went on a big way, 22-year career, mostly with the Braves. He won 300 games. He won 20 or more games in 5 different seasons. Nobody does that today. And he was a left-hander who didn't throw hard. He had one of those great finesse pitchers. So a tip of the hat to Tom Glavin, local boy from Billerica, who made good.
Well, I got a hubbub that might kind of get me in trouble like Peter, because mine is from today's paper. But Peter, I don't think mine was on the front page or on the front of the Metro section.
At least it's not from Kentucky.
So mine was, and it's this great picture of this firefighter rescuing a husky that fell through the ice in Pleasure Bay in South Boston. It was walking with its owner, and it went out on the ice, and then it went through. But what I liked is that the firefighter who did the rescue, this is a guy named Sean Coyle of Ladder 19, said, "We look at the pets like citizens. They're loved by their owners, whether it's in a burning building or a freezing lake. We just want to get them out safe." There's something I liked about that. It's like the man's best friend thing. We take them as seriously as people.
That's
so there
awesome.
You go.
We're actually editorializing on that tomorrow. You'll be happy to know.
That's right.
So it has been noticed. That's good.
Well, Peter Canellis, editorial page editor at the Boston Globe, and Mike Ross, former city councilor, op-ed columnist for the Globe, attorney at Prince Lobel. Gentlemen, thank you both. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Anthony.
And stay with us when we come back. We're going to hear about a public school program that sends kids in need home with backpacks filled with food. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.